Tonight we're going to tackle a difficult issue, which is the issue of to deal with the science view of the origins of man, which of course links man from an evolutionary process that started with ultimately an amoeba that emerged, you know, for millions of years and ended up with mankind, versus the account of Bracious, which clearly indicates that man was sort of like brought into being as a separate existence. That's one of that's the basic question we're going to try to tackle today. So the big challenge is, I mean, and this is this experience. There's the experience of a Jewish kid who went to yeshiva high school and maybe did not get such a full education, goes to any university, goes into a biology class, and sits, you know, in a lecture hall with 400 people, somewhere in the back. And the professor starts to go on to the various theories about exactly how man came into being and said, well, before the Homo sapiens that emerged out of Africa, there was Homo Neanderthalus and Homo Rhodesientius and Homo erectus, and that evolved based upon their use of tools into the Homo sapien that came around about, 70,000, you know, whatever happened to 1,000, you know, this is itself an argument, 100,000 years ago or 200,000 years ago. So the question is that will be a very jarring experience, because the basic traditional view of the Bracious is not that. Okay? So let's take a look at Peric Bayes and Bracious, and let's go to the creation of man. Let's pick it up with Peric Bayes, Pasuk Zayin. Who'd like to read? Of course David likes to read. He loves to read.
He's a favorite reader.
Good, Dave. Be your manager.
Hashem, God, formed the man of soil from the earth and blew into his nostrils the soul of life, and man became a living soul.
Okay, stop. So what is, on the surface here, what's difficult? Or is it just crystal clear?
Is it like a question about something else? Okay. Why is it an Hashem God?
Good. Right. And the first account is just Vayomer Elohim. It's just Elohim. Okay, that's another good question. That distinction is identified by Chazal. Okay, it's good. That brings into the broader question: what is the distinction between the first account of Bracious versus the second account of Bracious? This is the second account. Let's call it the detailed account for the time being. And there's more of a that itself is a general question we can go into: is the two accounts of Bracious, and what are the differences, and why are there two accounts? Okay, but let's take a look at this pasuk. Vayitzer Hashem Elokim et Adam afar min adamah. Dust from the earth. And he blew into his nostrils the soul, a living soul. And man became a living soul. Okay, so what's difficult? What are the difficulties here? Good.
Well, then this would contradict a little bit the theory that man comes from animal.
How so?
I guess it would seem so. Where the pasuk saying that man was basically formed by God, Hashem blowing into his nostrils.
All right. So on the surface, it seems that man is an independent, separate, autonomous creation. It's like, in a certain sense, at one point in time, God sort of brought this being into, went ding. then he didn't slowly evolve out. There's not a slow developmental process. Okay, that's one problem. What else? Okay, that's a classic problem. What else? And one of them we saw a little bit last week, but what else? We just list all the problems of the pasuk on the surface. I mean, what does it mean that he's dust of the earth? I mean, you know, a person has felt you have felt your skin and your body. There doesn't seem any dust of the earthness to it. So, what is that? You know what I mean? And then, what is this blowing business? You know, why does a soul have to be blown into the, and why only through the nostrils? You know what I mean? Okay, and then Adam became a nefesh chaya. So this pasuk is difficult. So building upon what we said last week. So how would you? So before I say anything, how would you approach this?
Not to take it literally.
Okay, so what would you not take literally? So it didn't happen? So what do you take? What are you taking not literally?
That he's a living being. Like, maybe he was living beforehand.
Okay. In other words, or the question is, did Adam HaRishon have a belly button? Because if you're saying he's a separate creation, you didn't need an umbilical cord. Your belly button is from the umbilical cord that you have from being in the uterus.
Right.
But if you're bing, there's no belly button, right? So that you can say the question. That I heard somebody frame the question that way, which I felt was kind of cute. Did Adam HaRishon have a belly button? It could be the question. What do you guys have to say here?
Just by looking at this and seeing it on the surface, you would think no.
No, what?
That, like, that man created him from nothing, meaning, like, he had no parents.
Oh, so you would go that Hashem, you know, from the surface in the plain psukim, that Adam didn't have parents.
Right, according to this.
From you're saying from the plain pshat, that means that he did not have parents, and he was the first. He was the first prototype. That's it.
And I'm assuming that the people they call, I think, the creationists,
that
the biblical people out there,
right,
in America,
right, the literalists.
The literalists are basing it, just like Warren's saying, on this very pasuk,
right?
That there's your proof that man did not evolve from. That's it.
God said it. That does it. I believe it.
That's it.
As the Christians will tell us.
Yes.
Okay, so we're not Christians. And we don't take that approach. And what we learn going back to the first chapter of Bereishis is the Aretz Hayta Tov Avohu. What you see from the word Aretz is not referring necessarily to land, to earth, or rather what? How would you translate the first the Aretz Hayta Tov Avohu? How did we deal with it last week? Well, it fits into a system, but what the system of the whole chapter one is it's a system of God doing malacha. So in order to do malacha, what do you need first? What do you need first? Don't look my face. What do you need first? How'd you better translate Aretz?
Matter.
So man, it's not Afar minatamah can be referring to, you know, on the plame shot, you would initially take it as being the dust, but it could be referring to as an Hashem formed man from the elements. And the proof really is that the way the Chazal say that Adam is a hybrid of as the Bereishis Rabba says, Hashem took from the Elyonim and the Tachtonim, from the lower sphere, which is the material universe, and the Elyonim in the higher sphere, okay, from the metaphysical sphere. The man is a blended, is a hybrid creature. So that's not a problem. So one could argue that Hashem took, maybe Hashem took a Neanderthal and gave him what? Gave him a soul. So, Ray Shade, when I was discussing this issue with him, he felt that one could, it would be against the Torah to be a pure biological evolutionist. That's because essentially with that, then you're saying that Adam and his grandparent, the chimpanzee, is no difference other than complexity. There's no different in kind. One is more sophisticated than the other, but not different in kind. It is true that God could have used, you know, had it directed and intervened within the evolutionary process, but you have to make the one of the foundational principles of Judaism is that man has a metaphysical soul that was super added to him. Okay? Now, whether it was at one, you know, whether the physical thing came, the physical body came in at one shot, or it could have been a process of development, that's not necessarily, you wouldn't be limited to say that. You could possibly apply it metaphorically. As you're saying, it was not for Yitzhar Hashem Elokim as Adam up and Abba. Doesn't mean happen at one singular moment necessarily. It could have been through a process. And it doesn't matter. A chimpanzee is a matter, which is then being could be then, you know, utilized for this purpose.
I have a question.
All right.
I understand maybe within the framework of evolution itself, perhaps it's not rational to say that the metaphysical part of man, or his tzal elokim, was part of the evolutionary process. However, specifically, what Torah principle does it violate to maintain that position? What would be wrong if we'd say that the... Again, I understand maybe logically it may not be, but what Torah principle is violated by saying that the Tzal Elokim was itself part of the evolutionary process? So that it's against the
yes,
Torah.
Yes, because the principle that we're dealing with here is that man is not a determined being. He has free will, and therefore he can be subject to mitzvos, which is the first, you know, the story of the God. If man is essentially an animal, albeit sophisticated, you cannot give him mitzvot. Because whatever he's genetically programmed to do, he's going to do. Or environmentally directed toward to do. It's over. He is determined at birth. So therefore you're denying Bechira and that he have all the time of mitzvah.
Okay. Again, I'm not saying this is a logical position, but does it violate any Torah principle to say that a rational being with free will evolved from a non-rational animal that did not have the capacity for free will? That way we're not violating any principle by saying, now you might not like the idea, but again, is that a violating any Torah idea to say that again that was part of the evolutionary process that man developed into a being?
Well, that
and don't they maintain that? Isn't that what
no? They maintain there is no soul.
Okay, you're saying there's no soul.
No, there's no soul. An evolutionary they maintain that is a relic from. What they're trying to do is, based upon their studies of neuroscience, to explain how man thinks.
So they're actually maintaining that there is no.
There is no.
That is it. Okay.
That is really a religious idea.
Okay. Okay.
Which cannot be proven. Which you're positing.
Okay.
So, and if somebody was really honest, they would say, and man really ultimately is not that, is although other than its sophistication, is not qualitatively different from a chimpanzee, its okay. grandfather.
Okay.
They don't agree there's a soul.
Okay.
I mean, I would say everybody, that's the basic point is that man, and that's why it's a very big issue, because where the divide is, does man having a nephesh versus not having a nephesh, for Judaism is everything. That really is that is a battle. So they're trying to explain everything within, brain chemistry and the impulse of the brain. Well, if you maintain that exists a soul, you'll say the soul utilizes, we don't know how, the brain as a tool of the soul. It's not the soul. So that's a very big, their implications are massive. And look, the whole study of paleontology and evolution is a very young field. It's only 150 years old since Darwin. There isn't such a very big fossil record because the nature, when an animal dies, it gets eaten by predators, or the fossils decay. You don't get that much. The fossil record is not that strong. I'm not saying there is not, an idea of a common descent, because one of the strongest arguments for an evolutionary process is that we share, as I mentioned before, well over 98.4% of the DNA that you have of a chimpanzee. So to say you're not related seems to be a little bit difficult to say. But to say that we are just quantitatively superior, in my mind, is equally difficult to say. So the Torah is using a more literary approach, is explaining that that Hashem, took a material, could have been a living material, and injected, doesn't literally mean, because the soul is not within your skin. So it didn't blow it into your nostrils. Hashem didn't blow it. Hashem can blow, obviously, in a certain sense. So man became a differentiated being. In fact, what does Unkelus say? Vahi adam l'nefesh chaya? He says, what's the phrase he uses? He uses Rucha Mamala, a speaking spirit, the ability to speak and articulate, which means to articulate ideas and to communicate ideas. So there became a differentiated being. And that really was the essence of the creation experience. So also the phrase of the term in the first chapter of Tzelem Elokim means that Hashem gave man a different quality, a different potential, if you will, than anything in the zoo has. Okay? And if this, one of the questions, if the orangutan or chimpanzee had the same thing, given the same amount of time that man was around, why did he not use his cell and came to his intelligence to develop technology? It seems that the gorilla today is not that different than the gorilla 100,000 years ago. Where's the technological growth there? They seem to be still sticking sticks into ant hills and eating ants. They don't have a wholesale and retail ant supply store where you can purchase already packaged ants for your consumption, and bring your Visa card to purchase that. They didn't seem to develop that. So the fact that it seems to be that they're sort of like in a very slow growth, they're existing in their natural way, seeing that there is a quality, the technological leaps and bounds seems to be dramatic. There is a something. But that really is, that is the battlefront. That is a flashpoint between science, evolutionary position today, and the Torah's position. We're not agreeing that with the creationists that literally this is the physical account, this is a play by play, scene by scene, because the Torah was giving, as we mentioned last week, was there to give certain concepts. Okay? And I'd like to, maybe if we have some time, to explore some of those concepts. But that's the basic, that's the essential approach. So that one, before we go on, is that, so on one hand, we're not limited by the
the terminology of the phrase of the play-by-play to necessarily believe that Hashem brought Adam into being in this kind of way of gathering dust together and blowing a metaphysical soul into the, you know, the soul into man. Okay. On the other hand, to say that man is no, but on the other hand, clearly, man is a separate creation than the animal. The animal corrupted, you know, there's a creation of the animals, and Adam is set apart and above the animal kingdom. So there is, the key principle is that man is qualitatively differentiated from the animal kingdom. That is a, that's the major yisod of Parakalf and Parakvias and Parashas. Okay, and to deny that, I think is denying the Torah, because you're basically saying that man, if you deny that, then you're saying that man is an animal. He's by definition determined, and therefore the idea of giving him mitzvah is ridiculous, and there therefore is no Judaism. Do you see the implication? Is that clear? That point clear? So that's the point. Now, we're not a, you know, we applaud every idea that they come up with, and a new innovation, you know. Now they're constantly changing the theories of it, you know, how did it occur? Because they obviously trying to go back into time to figure out, induct from very small clues of what occurred. It's not so simple. But, you know, we're not afraid. Interesting point that I was thinking about the, you know, one of the classic questions is not exactly the ape man question, but another question about the teva. Many people ask the teva, like, the teva was essentially was the dimensions of a NFL football field. It's about 300 amos, so it's about 300 yards, you know, 50 amos wide and 30 amos tall. The question, of course, you're going to have is, how is it possible that all the animals fit in, all the species? So if you're going to say it's only the head species, not like every kind of zebra, but just the basic zebra, well, then you have a question. If that happened 4,000 years ago, how do you explain for the diversity of, you know, there's you know, thousands of kinds of beetles? It's not like, there's not like, you know, there's a tremendous diversity. So if they are all wiped out and then they were put in, so, I mean, there's another question on the mikra. So there's a couple of ways you can go here. Either way, you're going to say there was a regional flood, which the archaeological evidence does support, but there are animals elsewhere. But since civilization was crowded, you know, collected in one area, that was the essential, you know, happening. That was the central place that Hashem was trying to teach a lesson to mankind. So that's the fact that there's a deer running around in Wyoming when there's nobody there. It's really relevant to mankind, because the focus of the flood is really to teach man vital lessons. So, right. So that's one approach. And if you're saying that there were some, and if that goes, and so there's one unbelievable aspect from the Moreh Nevuchim, which really I think deals with these difficult, what's called encounters between the Torah and science in general. One of the things that takes up many pages in the Rambam. Was the question was, is the universe eternal? Did it always exist as it were together with Hashem? Which was the position, the dominant position of the science from Aristotle. Aristotle maintained that the universe and Hashem always existed. They always coexisted. In fact, they didn't coexist separately, but they had a unique relationship. As he says, there's a shadow to a wall. In a certain sense, the universe was governed by the idea of Hashem, but they were inextricably connected. You can't have a shadow without a wall. Okay? So, the Rambam, in his analysis of this point, says that I maintain that Aristotle did not prove his point, and here's my reasons why. And he goes on for many pages why. But let's say he did. Let's say he's in fact right. Then I would take the first chapter of Bereishis as being all a metaphor. Now that's very... So basically, if we are encountering clear proof. What he's basically pointing out, he's saying, like, he brings forth the following position, that if science can bring a clear proof that something is absolutely impossible, okay, there could not have been a, let's say it gets proven that there could not have been a worldwide flood. I don't know if it could or could not, but let's say in 100 years' time, it will become absolutely clear that that is an impossibility. Okay? Maybe it is now. I don't know. I'm not a scientist. I can't tell you. We see from the Rambam's precedent, that's not a problem. We take the mikra, we take the pesukim as being literal, unless it's an impossibility. And therefore, just as we know that God, when the Torah says God's hand, God stretched out his hand against Egypt, doesn't mean that Hashem has a hand. It means a metaphor for Hashem's power, because we know that it's impossible for Hashem to have a hand. If we get to the position that there could not be a worldwide flood, and it had to be a regional flood, then we have to take the psukim in a metaphorical point. You know, well, that's it. And there are certain life lessons here that supposed to be Hashem is teaching us via this idea of a worldwide flood that did not actually occur. Okay? Do you understand what I'm saying? So either science is going to prove that they're going to have to retract and say, oh, we see evidence there was a worldwide flood, and we'll know in 100 years that. Right now they think there was a regional flood, now they come to think, like, oh, we see new evidence that we really, because as you know, in science, things are constantly changing. So if they come to the evidence that, oh, we see proof for a worldwide flood, wonderful, that fits into the Pshut Shel Mikra. And if there becomes overarching, comprehensive proof that there was only a regional flood, then we'll take those psukim where it says that all creatures underneath the Shemayim died, as being not literally the entire Shemayim, but where civilization, the cradle of civilization, where Mesopotamia, where Noah and Avram were living. Okay? So either way you go, you're fine. That's a very important principle when you're going to hear, because oftentimes you'll hear questions against the Mikra, against the psukim, which, if you don't have a background, can shake a person's emuna that really this is really a reality, and really this is not just a ancient fable stitched together by a bunch of smart people at some point in history. Okay, so I'm just pointing out a general approach to deal with not just the problem of the ape man issue, but or the Teva problem, but you know all these kinds of problems. And you see, as a precedent set by the Ram himself.
Yep. If you maintain that there was just a regional flood and not a worldwide flood, I thought that the idea of saying that Noah took the animals he put them in the ark was for the perpetuation of the species. Now, if there's just a regional flood, then the species are being perpetuated outside of this area anyway. So what's the point of putting the animals on the ark? I mean, I'm just raising that.
Right, Kakasha. No, because then you would say that really, then you get back to the Teva. Is the Teva simply a pragmatic tool to rescue Noah? Or there are certain fundamental tshuva, it was also a tool in the development of the Gadol HaDor, Noah, for him to pursue himself properly to restart civilization? Because that idea, I think, is true as well. In other words, not simply a pragmatic thing that there should be, beetles and zebras and giraffes in the world. Noah's gathering of the animals benefited him as well. Because he had to see himself in a certain kind of way. That's more of I'm not going to go into that. The character of Noah is not so such a simple... Noah's not a simple, clear-cut comic book... easily understood character. He's a very nuanced personality. And, I mean, there's much proof to point out that Hashem was trying to deal with that Noah on one hand was a tzaddik, but he had limitations. Yeshaya says, May Noah, the waters of Noah. Chazal point out that he's associated with the Mabul. There was a lack in him. He did not go out to the people. He lacked his ability to be effective with trying to turn around the people. There are issues there. So you would move in that kind of direction. Okay, so that'd be one. But again, what occurred 4,000 years ago I don't know. And I don't know if we can all, you know. I mean, look, one thing I'm absolutely certain about is that people 1,000 years from today, in the year, 3009, will look at us as a bunch of primitives. I am confident about that. They'll look at our technology and they'll simply laugh. They'll look at our beliefs being, like we look at people in the Middle Ages that believe that we could do alchemy. If I cook these metals, I can produce gold. And of course, if a woman sings, clearly she's a witch and we should kill her. That seems reasonable. Right? And all kinds of, and that there could be spontaneous generation. That we all know that rats come out of garbage. They just pop out of that. So, like, we laugh at them. We're no more intelligent than they are. We're living from the fruits of an intellectual heritage that's progressed for, 1,000 years from now. So, 1,000 years from now, God willing, will be even, far greater heights, and they'll look at our knowledge as being, simply pathetic. And 1,000 years from that, they will look at them as being the year 4,009. They'll look at the people 3,000 equally as being dinky, because the knowledge is infinite. So, and these issues, so we have a vehicle of dealing with these problems.
I wanted to share that.
But doesn't mean on the other hand we don't, that these problems should not be dealt with. I'm not saying everybody should deal with them all the time. Also, who should deal with them? These are not such a simple thing. So I want to share a little bit about. The point here, what are some of the ideas to understand the chapter 1 and chapter 2 of Bereishis? What is the context? So I want you to take a look at, just scan through the chapter 1, chapter 2 yourself. Let's spend 3-4 minutes looking over the chapter. Look it over, and then look at chapter 2, and look at some of the, and let's see if we can identify some of the differences. Okay? Time to take a little break. All right. So, what's the differences? What differences strike you when you look over the first chapter and you look over the second chapter?
What differences? The first chapter and the second one seem out of order.
First, we have a big out of order thing.
First, it says there's no rain, cause there's no man to work it, then there is rain, and then God formed man. Wasn't the whole thing with the rain supposed to be after Hashem formed man?
Right.
Then he already formed man, so why is it repeating that?
Right. So, and man was not there to work the land. Now the rain. Now I don't know if that's really rain, but Eid Yaleh Min Aretz. That's a mist comes upon the land. I don't know if that's not really a rain. It seems to be instrumental to create man. Whatever. Okay, but there's an obvious problem here. What are you missing? There's no day one of Or. There's no day two of the water and the yabasha. There's no day three of the vegetation. And then after man created, who's created after? There's something completely out of order. What are the animals created in the second chapter? That part of it, and Hashem realized he had no Ezer Kenega. He had no helpmate. Go ahead.
Hashem God said, "It is not good that man be alone. I will make him a helper corresponding to him."
Good.
Now Hashem God had formed out of the ground every beast of the field and every bird of the sky and brought them to man to see what he would call each one.
Okay, stop right there. So what's happening here? Hashem creates all the animals.
It's in the past tense, like he had created.
Read the Hebrew. Read the Hebrew. And he forms from the ground all the animals of the field. So from the, and then he brings them to Adam to see what he'll call them, and then whatever Adam called him, the Nefesh Chaya, whatever he called them, that was his name.
So the bottom line is that clearly this is really strange that the animals were created in the 6 day first, and then Hashem created man. So what's up with that? Okay. So here's the key point. The basic thesis here is that Perek Beis is an elaboration of certain themes which is in Perek Aleph. Okay? And the goal is not to, and it's doing so, not necessarily to, because the goal really is not necessarily to work out the order, because the order is really instrumental to show certain, to make evident and clear the ideas. Or ultimately, what really, to make it very simple, the approach that I'm taking here is that the goal here is not to give you a specific historical account of what organically occurred in space and time. The goal here is to teach humanity what is the nature of Adam and his place in the universe. Is the main principle here. Okay? So the first chapter, Hashem is functioning as the Borei, as being the Baal Melacha. You're creating out of this matter, bringing to being entire universe. And man is part of that. So that really is really represent what you call, this goes back to your question of really Hashkacha Klolos. It's the word Elohim, is God as being dealing with Midas Hadin. In other words, he relates to the natural order in a purely what? In a purely lawful manner. Okay? Pure laws of nature. But interesting thing is, and Chazal pick up on these on the nuances, if you go back to Perek Aleph for one little moment. Perek Aleph, after man is created, okay, there's the last couple of psukim there, which is very interesting. I'm talking Chav Ches and Chav Tes. We've arechel some Elohim, and Hashem blessed them. Talking about Adam and Chava. Again, one obvious thing is that they seem to be both created, and here they created one after the other. Another distinction to catch. Vayomer lahem Elohim, and Hashem said to them, Pruvu, reproduce. Umelu etz aretz, and fill the world. Vekiv Shua, and dominate it. Urdu begazayam, and dominate the fish of the sea, Urofa Shemayim, and the fowl of the heavens, Vechol chayat ramet al adma. Okay, interesting. Some Rishonim view this as actually a chiyav, a peruvu. Was not. Is this talking about a blessing that he added them the capacity to be successful in reproducing, like he did prior to the other animals, in order that they should overcome all the difficulties in the natural order to have successful progeny, A? Or B, there's actually a mitzvah here. Okay, we learn this mitzvah. Okay, that's what. Two is when by Yomer Elokim, Hinein Asai Lachem Kol Esav Zareya Zera Asher Al Panei Kol Ad Aretz. I have given you all of the vegetation, all of the grass and herbs that produce seed on the face of the entire earth, and all the trees which produce fruit. Zareya Zera Lachem Yelachla. They should be for food. Now, well, why does he have to command that? It's like, you know, it's like saying Hashem says, and you should take a deep breath and breathe in the oxygen, and when you're thirsty, drink cold beverages. It seems to be very odd that he's telling you, and then he says, L'chol chayas ha'aretz, l'chol ova shemayim, l'chol ova mezal ha'aretz, asher bo nefesh chaya es kol yerek ezev l'achla. They should also eat the vegetation for them as well. Okay, this is that kind of, I mean, why does that be a special declaration that cows eat grass, essentially? I mean, it seems to be very strange what's being taught here. And what's being taught here, Rashi picks up on it. I'm going to go to the Rashi. This is the Rashi on Chavtes. This should be for you, fruit, that he tells Adam and Chava, and to all the animals of the tree. Hishvalem HaKasav. The Hamos v'chayos l'machol. They were the, Hashem equated both man and the animals in regards to what they are to eat. V'lo hirsha l'adam l'chava l'hamiz bria l'chol basar. God did not permit man to kill any of the creatures to eat its flesh. Ach kol yerek esev yachlu yachad kulam. Rather, all of the vegetation of the world, they will eat together, both animals and man. Oh, b'keshiyav keshabo b'nei Noach hiter lehem basar. He permitted them to have flesh. Kol remes asher hu chai. All, because it says later on by Noah, all that crawls, which is living. Kierek Esev, here's the key phrase. Shehitarti l'adam arishon. Is now to you, Noah, as I permitted him to eat the vegetation. Nor just as Adam was permitted, hitarti at the, permitted him to eat the grass and the vegetables. I'm now expanding the heter to now include what? Flesh. So that chazal is something very strange. Hashem allowed him to eat. Does a heter? What is he supposed to do? What is that? And this is really the most, this is the key profound point here, is that Adam was not simply to be put into a Polynesian club med environment where he can sit and drink tropical beverages and eat fruit and prance around the garden naked with his beautiful wife. That's the comic book version of Gan Eden that we see on TV. No. The real concept that the Torah and Chazal bring out is that the Hashem guides Adam to be a one who appreciates the wisdom that is intrinsic in the universe, see his place in the universe, and understand that Hashem has granted, if you will, food. The word heter means not that Hashem was saying, "I'm giving this to you, I'm giving this to you, you know, I'm giving you permission to eat it." Rather, it's the same idea of that we have by a bracha. Kol anena below mazeh below bracha kilomal. Anybody who eats of this world without making a bracha, as if he is involved in me'ila, which is taking the property of the base of Mikdash for his own personal use. What does that mean? That the concept is that that Hashem did not give us the material world just for us to allow us to pleasure ourselves and to fantasize and enjoy it per se. Rather, the food, even to Adam, was given to him as being conditionally provided he sees the educational value of the food. In other words, you can have the food provided you see me as the bore through the food. That's why he says he was moderated him the food. He permitted him to have the food, but did not permit him to have kill the animals. For now, we bal pashkas. It was not unnecessary for him, Adam Rishon. So really, Adam is being guided, and also the first man is also what he's also given. He's given. He's told to peruvu. According to some Rishon, it's a mitzvah. Not just you can have sex whatever you want, and no matter what. It's governed to be provided and seen as seeing as being instrumental to creating a man who sees his place in the universe as being part of the Chachmas Hashem. Okay, not just simply he can just, because what is the contra, what is the ultimate possibility? That this world is mine. It's my stuff. And I'm the only person in the world, therefore I'm the king. And it's all for me. Which is a natural disposition that post Gan Eden, post sin of Gan Eden, all people naturally, is our default setting. We naturally feel, we're naturally narcissistic, everything's for us. Anything that anybody does for us is, by definition, of course, they should do for us because we're wonderful, and what else are they there for? They are purely tools of our agenda. Sometimes we'll even say thank you, just to make them feel good and to ensure that they fulfill my agenda next time even better. So essentially, that's the point here is that Hashem, even in the first chapter, which is part of the natural, the Hashkacha Klolis, is that intrinsically in that is the idea that Adam is to see that the Esev was given to him as a heter, conditionally, provided he sees it as being instrumental. Now, Adam, as a powerful mind, who as you read before, was able to name all the animals, scientifically classify all animals, was able to see from this vegetable the fact that there is a Bo-Ray responsible to his very being, and he is absolutely a dependent being. This also explains another thing Rashi has, which you read before, that there was no rain because there was no man to work the field. What do you mean? There's an Amazon that existed without anybody working the field. It was a beautiful, lush environment. So the Chazal say that Hashem put him there, maybe right prior to the Gan, and everything was not fully done. And he had to see that deprivation, and what did he do? He davened, and the rain came. Which means that the Medrash is pointing out that Hashem, as the second chapter is functioning as God, focusing on God as the Melamed of Adam, to make him the possible candidate to be the father of civilization. So certain fundamental life lessons that, A, I am a dependent being. There's a whole world that is causally organized. I have to see that how it's organized. See the various systems. See that while this system needs to function, needs rain, and to praise Hashem for having these systems, and then ask that He should fulfill that design and grant rain. So therefore, there should be an entire functioning biosphere, an ecosystem. So intrinsically in the very being of, and from the very dawn of man, Hashem as Bo-Ray is not simply putting him, man, in a random environment for them to exist as an animal, a human animal, as we go back to the earlier possibility, as the grandchild of the chimpanzee, but rather as a being that is ennobled with its Tselem Elokim, perceives the design of the universe, perceives a creator, praise the creator for providing everything, sees the lack, and ask Hashem to complete that lack through specifically the rain. And that is Adam functioning on the highest level in the Gan Eden. And therefore, and Hashem helps him by what? Bringing the science product to him. Here, name these animals. How would you categorize them? And we talked about before, that was necessarily a precursor for Chava, so he would appreciate her and not view her as just a simply as a biological function only. So that's the major motif. Perek Aleph is seeing God as the Baal Malacha, and man fits into that lawful design. And then the second chapter deals with focus on man as a subject, and God is functioning as the Malamed to educate him specifically. Now that goes much more deeply in the Gan, what the Gan is all about. There's certain lessons he was taught in the Gan. But even in the first chapter, there's even a foreshadowing of that by Chazal say, he was matir to have the food. What are you supposed to do? No, but the idea was the food was given as just not for him to sit there at a all-you-can-eat shmorg and just, you know, eating, gorging himself so he could just think that he's intrinsically wonderful. Rather, it's designed that everything, his very existence, would see the design of the Bria, and he would be a being that would appreciate Hashem on the highest level via the Maisa Bracious itself. So the highest level is really the first is seeing it with in the Elohim framework. Then Hashem, as it were, with the Yud Kei Vav Kei, is having even Hashkacha Pratis, which is more compassion for man, to help him out with even more specialized curriculum, to help him through even more life lessons, i.e. the Gan, which is the specialized classroom where he can be taught even more advanced concepts. And that's the basic distinction between Perek Aleph and Perek Beis. You should know that there is a thing called the documentary hypothesis that looks at the two chapters being the proof there are two authors. Not only two authors, actually, four authors. and that the entire Chumash was stitched together by no less than four or five authors. Okay? And one of their proofs they bring is the fact that you see there's two accounts. So there was obviously two traditions of the creation, which was then later put together by some later editor-in-chief. So the approach of the Masorah is the Mikra will articulate even a different account, even contradictory, to bring up different themes. It uses a literary device to bring up certain ideas, because the point here is not to teach exactly how did man originate in specific scientific historical detail, but to give the primary philosophical foundation points, the foundational principles for man to be Adam, and not to be an orangutan. So you don't have the reverse, you don't have de-evolution of man going from man and being an animal, which is what we have essentially oftentimes even today. You have de-evolution of man. So that's the basic, this gives you sort of a basic approach to the two chapters, a basic approach to deal with evolution, interventionist evolution approach, non-evolution, different thoughts on that, and how to deal with fundamental contradictions between the archaeological record and the Tanakh. Now, I have not in the 51 minutes we've been learning, I don't think I've exhausted this topic, but what I want to give you is a little bit of what I call a Pesach L'maven, a little bit of a perspective and orientation that you'll be able to navigate, and give some sort of like an outline, a schematic to journey forward. All right? There is a special subclass of Torah called Da Ma Lahashiv L'Apikores. Know how to respond to a heretic, which is that the heretic will come with various questions to show that the Torah is not divine or the Torah is not true for whatever reason. And there's an art to respond back. Now, that is not the purview of every Jew. Okay? But a person should be able to lead Dal Mal Hashiv L'Apikores, which is inside themselves. Now, you have to at least answer your own questions. Not that you have to take on the problems, every kind of problem that modern man can devise against the authenticity of Torah. That should be left for the Gedolei HaMasorah. So, this is just a perspective, and it's a beginning, and certainly not the end chapter. Okay, something to think about.